Good evening. I'm David Brinkley, NBC News. General Motors and the union have a tentative settlement. Tentative because it still must be ratified by the union's members, and because this is the national agreement setting a general pattern for wages and working conditions, while numerous local issues in local plants still have to be settled. On the wages, the company offered 38 cents an hour. The union wanted 61 cents. It is said they settled for about 50 cents, splitting the difference. A General Motors official said, yes, he assumed it was inflationary, simply because the increase in pay is far bigger than any foreseeable increase in productivity. But he said that's how union settlements are going these days.
The first official word came in a joint announcement by two public relations men, one for the company, one for the union. Nobody said why the statement was not made by Earl Bramblett and Leonard Woodcock, who headed the two bargaining teams. When they did appear, they issued separate statements, Woodcock first.
A tentative agreement has been reached covering the United States plants of the General Motors Corporation, and at the union's request, details of the settlement are being withheld pending our report to the International Executive Board and to the General Motors National Council.
Woodcock would not discuss contract terms at all, and he would not say he's recommending union acceptance of the agreement.
Well, gentlemen, I hate to be rude, but I'm going to leave because this is getting us nowhere.
There was no symbolic handshake of labor management agreement between Woodcock and GM negotiator Earl Bramblett, who did not even appear until Woodcock was gone. Bramblett would not discuss what's in the package either, but he did say the money figures are inflationary.
Again, an inflationary contract.
I would say that the cost of the settlement is substantially more than the anticipated increase in productivity of the country, and this, of course, is true of the general level of settlements in recent times. Well, that's a definition of a general definition of inflation.
What Bramblett considers inflationary is the hourly wage increase. Apparently, it's up from about $4 an hour to about $4.50. The unlimited cost of living adjustment given up 3 years ago by Walter Reuther is back in the contract. The union's demand for retirement at $500 a month after 30 years service apparently has been approved in modified form and is a new feature in the contract. The wage compromise is only 10 cents an hour off the union's original demand. The 30 years and out concept and the cost of living clause both represent major concessions on the part of the company. All that sounds very impressive, but there are signs today that Leonard Woodcock may have trouble selling the settlement agreement to the members of his union. There is within the UAW a rebel faction that's totally opposed to compromise. The dissidents wanted an immediate wage hike of $1.25 an hour, and today a large number of them picketed the GM delegates meeting. Leonard Woodcock did not show up. His associate Irving Bluestone did, and he told the 350 local union men they'll have to wait until tomorrow to learn just what's in the contract proposal. Bluestone said Woodcock and the executive board are now drafting an outline of the plan so the members can follow the explanation. Woodcock does not have as solid a grip on the union presidency as Walter Reuther had. He won the job by a single vote of the executive board, and it's now reported some members of the board are unhappy with the contract proposal. To keep the presidency, Woodcock must convince a number of non-supporters in the leadership and in the rank and file that he pushed General Motors hard, that he got as good a deal as was possible, and that he is a worthy successor to Reuther. Woodcock will try to prove that when he explains the agreement tomorrow. Steve Delaney, NBC News, Detroit.
On the threat of a railroad strike, a board appointed by the president some time ago recommended a wage settlement and also suggested some changes in the work rules to eliminate feather bedding. One union has rejected the wage settlement, saying it is not big enough. Today, three more rejected the rules changes, saying the rules were an integral part of railroading and could not be changed. George Meany of the AFL-CIO said if there is a railroad strike, the government ought to take over the railroads. He said the way they're being run these days, the government takeover might be an improvement.
This is NBC Nightly News, Wednesday, November 11th, 1970. brought to you by McDonald's Restaurants. McDonald's is your kind of place.
At McDonald's, when you pay for two hamburgers, French fries, and a Coke, you get change back from your dollar. Many of our customers think that's very important.
McDonald's can put good food in your family and change back in your pocket.
p.m. Can't sleep. 11:30. Wide awake. 11:45. Still awake. When you sometimes take more than 15 minutes to fall asleep and feel you need help, take Somanex as directed for 100% safe sleep. Somanex, with its three medical ingredients, quickly helps make you drowsy, helps you sleep. When you take more than 15 minutes to fall asleep, take Somanex and sleep, sleep, sleep.
Lainey Kazan.
I get a warm romantic motion when you use Aqua Velvet Lotion. That's how our romance began, because there's something about an Aqua Velvet man.
Men, put it on. Aqua Velvet with humectant. It's so good for your face. And oh, that manly fragrance. Aqua Velvet, put it on.
The leaders of 83 countries are in Paris, or on their way, for a memorial service for General de Gaulle in the Cathedral of Notre Dame tomorrow morning. The funeral itself will be small and unceremonious, as de Gaulle said he wanted. He will, in fact, be buried in a $63 wooden coffin with no bands, speeches, or bugles. President Nixon flew to Paris today.
The Shah of Iran was among the first foreign leaders to arrive in Paris to pay final tribute to Charles de Gaulle. Approximately 80 presidents, prime ministers, kings, queens, princes, and other special representatives are expected for tomorrow's ceremonies. At Notre Dame, the leaders will attend a mass for de Gaulle, a substitute for the state funeral the former French president said he did not want.
Tomorrow morning at 11, the bells of Notre Dame and all church bells throughout France will toll in memory of Charles de Gaulle. Tomorrow will be a day of national mourning in France, but today was a holiday, Armistice Day, commemorating the end of World War I.
But it was no holiday in Colombey, where crowds gathered outside de Gaulle's house. Tomorrow, the small town will be inundated by tens of thousands of Frenchmen coming to pay their final respects. This afternoon, President Georges Pompidou was whisked in to see de Gaulle's widow and the body of his former political chief. Preparations for the funeral included an army armored carrier which will move the body of General de Gaulle, a former tank commander, through the village. Today, a hole was made in the wall of the cemetery through which the plain wooden casket will pass. And today, the women of Colombey placed flowers on the graves of those buried in the cemetery and on the grave of he who will be buried there tomorrow. Garrick Utley, NBC News, reporting.
Last month, two students hijacked a light airplane out of Russia into Turkey, since they couldn't get out any other way. The Turks move very slowly in these cases, and today, 3 weeks later, they said yes, they would return the plane. As for the pilot and an unwilling passenger who went along, they will decide about that later, they said. And as for the hijackers themselves, they said nothing. The two American generals held in Russia were released, and they came back to Turkey.
Two American generals returned to Turkey after being held for almost 3 weeks by the Russians. They were flown here from the border by the Turkish Air Force to a Turkish air base just outside of Ankara, the Turkish capital and headquarters of the U.S. military mission in Turkey. Major General Edward Shearer, the first off the plane, is chief of the U.S. military mission here.
get you back your free land.
The generals seemed a bit on edge, but they said they were treated well and that they had passed their time playing billiards with the Russians. Brigadier General Claude McQuarrie is chief of U.S. ground forces.
I guess we'll be glad to see your family.
You can bet I will.
Have you been expecting to be released over the past week?
I was expecting and hoping every day, but I never had any indication until the time came to be released.
Where were you kept? In the city of Leninakan?
I'd like not to comment on that.
General, what are your plans now?
I plan to go see my family.
Thank you, General.
There are good reasons to believe that other military authorities are anxious to know all about the still mysterious events which brought these two American generals into Russian hands. And the generals were obviously not ready to talk about it there at a Tizmasut air base. Mark Schleifer for NBC News, Ankara.
West Germany and Poland have had lots of meetings talking about normalizing their relations. They began another meeting today, perhaps the last, because they think they may sign a treaty this week. One thing the Germans will have to accept as normal, though they don't like it, is that a part of Germany adjoining Poland became a part of Poland at the end of the war, and it still is. The part east of the Oder-Neisse rivers. In that part, there are German people living in Poland.
The Oder-Neisse line is named for the Oder and Neisse rivers. West of here is 39,000 square miles of land that used to be German, but was given to Poland to administer after World War II. Since then, communist East Germany has agreed the boundary is final. West Germany has not. But Polish signs along the Oder and Neisse rivers proclaim, we were here, we are here, and we will be here. In fact, the former German lands look very Polish today. In the major population center of Wrocław, called Breslau by the Germans, the past is becoming more and more a part of history. Most of Wrocław's German population fled or was moved out after World War II. The Polish government moved in young Polish families. The average age in Wrocław is now 25. Over half the people have been born since the war. Almost 70% of the old buildings in Wrocław were destroyed in the war. Alongside the small, old German houses that remain, the Poles built high-rise apartments and factories that account for much of Poland's total industrial product. In the countryside, where the people are much poorer, changes come slower. But here, too, most things have turned Polish. In the village school, lessons were in German for 200 years. Since the war, only Polish has been used in class. The local restaurant used to be run by German Walter Leichner and serve wurst and beer. Now it's run by Jan Swiewak and the village cooperative. The popular items are Polish sausage and great quantities of Polish vodka. The village of Kostinchin still has many who lived there before the war. All these elderly people speak German as well as Polish, and some, old and young, say they would like very much to leave Poland and go to Germany. Claims conflict on how many truly German want to go. The Poles admit to 15,000, the West Germans say it's 90,000. But there are many. And a part of the current negotiations is to include a way for more of those who have families in Germany to be reunited with them. Whether the Polish were here always may be in doubt, but it's obvious that on balance, the Polish are here now and will be here in the future. The treaty really simply confirms what is already so, but it would also be another step in the current series of efforts to improve East-West relations in Central Europe. Robert Hager, NBC News, in Poland.
In San Rafael, California, Angela Davis was indicted for murder, kidnapping, and conspiracy. In Sacramento, California, the Black Students Union at Sacramento City College demanded she be made the honorary homecoming queen. The Student Senate voted yes by 12-3, and it will make her the honorary queen.
We're proud of our 1971 Plymouths. They're the finest we've ever built. We're so proud, in fact, that for a limited time, we're making two special offers to make it easy for you to own one. First, there's the 1971 Fury V8 with new torsion quiet ride. To give it an extra big options, including power steering, power brakes, and air conditioning.
Testing the treatment of the prisoners of war.
If every American would just take 5 minutes of their time and write a letter to show their concern. They say, oh, they give us wonderful words, oh, we're so sorry and we'd like to help. Well, you can write a letter, show your concern. It only takes a few minutes.
Why do you think these letters will help?
We feel that the North Vietnamese and the communists of Southeast Asia look to world opinion to help balance their cause. There is a videotape been made that shows a very dramatic replica of all the things that the prisoners who have returned have told us about their conditions that they lived in.
This is a commercial for the POWs. A narrator pretends to be a prisoner.
It adds up to an awful lot of time to yourself. You wonder about how it is back home, about when you'll get released, about a lot of things. These Hanoi people watch public feeling carefully. Are counting on the people back home, not just the wives, but everybody. They must act. They must act now.
Do you think that really enough is being done by Americans to recognize the plight of the POWs and the men who are missing in action?
Well, every day I ask myself that, because today began my four-year nightmare, and my husband was shot down 4 years ago today.
In New York City last night, breakdowns and vandalism caused massive delays in the city's subways. 250,000 people were delayed, some as long as 5 hours, standing up in the trains, some stalled for hours in tunnels.
Some investigators theorize that the people who pulled the emergency cords and put the pipe on the tracks were saboteurs, proving how easy it is to stop the subway system. An investigation is underway. Dean Brayless, NBC News, New York.
I'm an actress. Performing in the theater means a lot to me. This is a big part, and it wasn't easy to get. I could have had a lot of other parts if I was willing to go along with those fads that sweep the theater, nudity or whatever. But that would have been a cop-out for me. I feel the same way about smoking. That's why I smoke Vantage. I tried a lot of brands that talk about their tar and nicotine numbers. They promised a lot of flavor, but for me they copped out.
Bella.
And I wouldn't trade real flavor for anything.
I'm gonna breathe.
Now I don't have to. Vantage doesn't cop out on flavor. And it's got 11 milligrams of tar and 0.9 milligrams of nicotine. They say it's because of a special tobacco blend and some new filter. All I know is I waited for what I wanted, and I got it.
Introducing Vantage, the cigarette that doesn't cop out on flavor.
On his way to Paris today, President Nixon worked on board his airplane with his advisors on next year's budget, now thought to be somewhere close to $235 billion. And it is widely assumed already it will be deeply in the red, $10 to $15 billion. On the plane, they were trying to decide who in the government gets the money and how much. Jerry Rubin is in Britain, where he and his friends disrupted a British television program the other night. Today, the British government told him to get out of the country by tomorrow. Lewis Wolfson, usually described as a financial wizard, went to prison for perjury having to do with his stock dealings. Today, a court found some flaw in his trial and ordered a new one. Rafael Minichiello, a year ago, hijacked an American passenger jet all the way from Los Angeles to Rome. Today, in Rome, he was found guilty after a trial. He could have got 30 years. He got 7.5. The memorial service for General de Gaulle in Paris at Notre Dame Cathedral will be seen live on NBC television tomorrow morning beginning at 4:30 a.m. Eastern Time. In the stock markets, the New York Exchange gained a little today. The Dow Jones Industrials went up more than 2 points and an average share gained 12 cents. On the American Exchange, there was no change. An Illinois married couple have cared for a 17-month-old girl since she was born and was turned over to an adoption agency. Now they want to adopt her legally. The court's investigators found them to be of high ethical and moral character, but a county judge in New Jersey ruled they could not have the child and must return her because they do not believe in a supreme being. The case has caused some little stir.
I don't believe there is a responsibility to inculcate in a child a belief in a supreme being, especially if you don't believe in one yourself. What I think you do have the responsibility of doing is to teach the child responsibility for his own acts, to try to lead a moral and ethical life. And as far as I'm concerned, the only way that is ever taught is by example, not by indoctrination.
The first time you went through the adoption with your little boy, it was a relatively routine thing, as you explained it to me. It was finalized very quickly. When the time came to do this with your little girl, was it a shock when you suddenly saw this was going to be rather complicated?
We were shocked and amazed at the proceedings, and we were frightened.
It was as if we could hardly register what was happening to us at that point. Just total dumbfounded disbelief and fright at the thought of losing a child. My child.